3 months earlier.
Now this delightful lipstick is everything you've ever wished for. It's as light as sheer silk on your lips, so comfortable and smooth, and just look at the beautiful jewel-like applique on the top. Truly, Mrs. Parsons, your husband will think you're a schoolgirl again. He'll be pleased as punch.
A crisp $1 bill was happily exchanged for the promise, and Betty continued the three-story walk up lightly, stopping outside another brownstone apartment door, identical to the 100 others around it. Children called up to her playfully from the street, and she waved down at them through clotheslines draped between the buildings. Betty carefully placed her bag on the front stoop beside her, resting on its four large silver feet. She was as inordinately proud of her cognac crocodile skin carry bag, with its thin, tan leather top handles, and its precious contents, as she was of the title it afforded her. She smoothed her red cotton dress down to where it hugged her waist and fell in a gathered skirt 2 inches below her knees. She adjusted her pale yellow pillbox hat with its jaunty red feathers and followed the curl of her victory rolls over her shoulders reflexively. Her bright red lipstick shone as she gave the closed door a bright smile, knocked sharply 3 times, and reclaimed her bag.
Avon calling!
The door opened, and a woman, not much younger than she, appeared.
Good morning, Ruth, darling.
Oh, Mrs. Jones, I forgot.
The young woman flustered. She wore pale blue jeans and a pale blue Sloppy Joe sweater, belted at her waist. Her hair was still in twisted rags from the night's sleep. From somewhere inside, a radio crackled with soft jazz, and a woman's voice floated down the wire in a tale of misdirected love. Beyond Ruth, sitting straight-backed on the faded couch, with her hands wrapped tightly around a teacup, another young lady sat. Her twill skirt was neatly pressed, but barely modest. It was summer 1943, and with the war still in full swing, fabric was strictly rationed to accommodate the soldiers' uniforms. New dresses were rare and barely made it past the knee. Mend and make do, the ladies encouraged each other daily. Ruth cast her tea guest an apologetic smile and turned to Betty, lowering her voice.
It's not a good time, Mrs. Jones. My friend Anna's sick, you see.
Betty looked over Ruth's shoulder to the other girl. She had the look about her of a startled cat, with red-rimmed eyes and a pale, blotchy face. Her knuckles were white where they clutched the teacup too hard. A dark bruise stained her pale décolletage, disappearing beneath the neck of her blouse. Her yellowing cheekbone was poorly covered by pressed powder. A sudden thought pushed unbidden into Betty's mind, and she heard it as clear as if Anna had spoken aloud.
Please, Lord, no. Johnny will flip his wig if anyone finds out.
Betty's brow furrowed slightly at the girl's private admission, but she retained her bright smile. Anna had no idea her own thoughts had betrayed her. But regardless, it didn't take more than intuition to figure out where the girl's troubles lay. Anna swallowed nervously under Betty's scrutiny, lifting her chin. She pulled her dark cardigan protectively against her chest as the radio spun its final melancholy chorus.
Sick, you say? Well, that is a shame. But what gorgeous kicks, darling!
Betty nodded to the patent red cork wedges the girl wore on her feet.
And such a honey, too. You sure must have the boys lining up to go with you.
Anna's eyes softened a bit, and she gave Betty a watery smile.
Only Johnny. He's my flutter.
She twisted her fingers together wistfully, before her eyes filled with tears, and turned resolutely back to her teacup. Still blocking the doorway, Ruth's mouth set in a hard line.
Flutter,
the girl thought.
He's not worth a half of it, silly girl. Johnny's a rotten, dirty spiv, and you'll end up a mole or worse.
Betty's chest tightened, and her heart hardened a little. A gangster's girl, then. Well used to hiding her reactions to the thoughts of others, Betty instead offered Ruth sympathetic eyes.
Well now, Ruth, how many times must I insist you call me Betty?
She patted Ruth's hand with her free one,
offering her a meaningful look.
And trust me, my darling, now is the very best of times. There's nothing that a nice cup of tea and some pampering can't fix.
Betty stepped inside the familiar sitting room and set herself on the couch next to Anna. Ruth hovered nervously for a moment, then disappeared into the kitchen to make a fresh pot of tea. Her thoughts jutted back indiscriminately.
As if I don't know. I should call the Flatfoots. Gotta teach him. Get him pinched for what he did. Anna's so stuck on him she'd never tell, though, even for her own good. If only her pop were still alive.
In the sitting room, Betty placed her bag on the floor at her feet, then reached out to pat Anna gently on the knee.
Ow!
Anna stiffened and quickly stretched the fabric of her dress a little further over her skin. Betty drew back her hand delicately, clasping it with the other on her own lap instead, her red-painted nails gleaming.
You took a fall, did you, doll?
She smiled kindly.
Never mind, bruises heal. We ladies are a little too clumsy for our own good sometimes, aren't we?
Anna's eyes widened, and she nodded emphatically, looking around.
He didn't mean it. It was probably my fault anyway. I'm such a bother to him. I know I am.
Betty winked and continued without pause.
I did it myself on Tuesday. I entirely missed the steps and landed right on my behind, breaking two of my best perfumes into the bargain. Oh my goodness, was I bent.
Betty reached down and unbuckled her bag, pulling out a number of ornate bottles and lining them up on the coffee table.
Don't you worry, Anna. I've got the perfect concealer to hide those bumps. You'll be looking a dish in no time.
An hour later, Betty left with both girls smiling and Anna clutching a purse full of free samples.
And remember, ladies,
Betty turned back, waving brightly.
There's always time to take time off for beauty.
Unwittingly, the girls had told her all she needed to know. Hearing another's thoughts wasn't the most impressive skill she had, but it was certainly the most helpful. Not that anyone knew. Betty tapped in and out of people's minds selectively, for the most part leaving their private thoughts just that. She was a lady, after all. No, Betty never looked for trouble. She's seen more than enough already. Each night when she towed off her slippers and climbed into bed, the memories came roaring back. Empty syringes and dull silver spoons. Broken plates and dark alleys. Blood, fire, revenge. And the very first whisper from another mind into her own when she was only 12 years old.
I wanted so much more for you, Susan, my baby.
Before that body, too, was shelled by a syringe. That was someone else's life, though. Now, Betty painted the darkness with a cherry red lipstick and a spritz of lilac perfume. Her days were brightened by the simple things. Laying a crisp New York Times by her husband's breakfast plate in the mornings, braiding her daughter's hair, gently tending her little boy's scraped knee. They were her world, her eternal delight and devotion. On occasions like these, though, which seemed far too common, Betty had no choice. Some thoughts needed to be heard. Her hemlock heel pumps clicked against the concrete steps as Betty trotted down. She strapped her cosmetic bag onto the back rack of her powder blue Schwinn ladies' bicycle and rode home, with plans whirring through her head.
Avon Calling Radio Serial. Written by Haley Camille. This is a full cast dramatization.
Avon calling.